Live from the greatest city, in the greatest state, in the greatest country, on the second greatest planet in the solar system, it's episode number 300 of the award-winning Midday with Trey and BK. On today's show, 11:45, our dogs and cats from the football weekend include halftime retirements and the Big Ten having a rough one. 11:30, where are we at in society? Dudes are apparently getting too much plastic surgery in 2018. And in mere minutes, you gonna count that loss, USC? I'm Trey Elling, buying the glass today. Well, it's me. That's because the fantasy sports expert and one-time gigolo Adam Wagner is out today. And the one Jew in a sea of Gentiles here at the Horn, living a trucker lifestyle that includes the fastest cattle prod this side of Dirty Six. He is Brad Kellner.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
GBTQXQC3PO Star Wars guy.
No yelling on the bus!
What's up, BK? How you doing?
Oh, man. I got to start off the show, Trey, by doing something that I don't enjoy doing. And something that I don't do very often. I don't have to do this very often. And
wash your privates?
Definitely don't enjoy it. I'm not going to start off the show by doing that. Might be the way I start Sunday morning sometimes, but I'm not going to start off this radio program by doing something like that.
Okay.
Where is your mind right now?
I was just trying to think of things that you don't do often. You've been on the record on this program.
Not
as,
true.
Saying as much.
Not anywhere close to true. I've got to start off today's program, episode number 300. Is that right?
It is.
As I tweet out the note card here, running a little bit behind today.
A very chaotic episode 300, too, by the way.
Absolutely. But
we'll tell you the behind-the-scenes stuff coming up here in a few minutes.
No doubt. I gotta start off the show by giving you some credit.
Whoa.
I got to give you some props, man. You are, I think rightfully, and most of our listeners out there would agree, rightfully nicknamed Terrible Take Trey.
I don't know if all of the listeners would agree with that. There's maybe a percentage.
I would say your wife and two kids, so whatever percentage they make up of who listens to our show. But that's about it. You are known as Terrible Take Trey, but you had a great take this past week. And it was all last week. You correctly predicted the Texas Longhorns to not only beat the Trojans of Southern Cal, but to beat them handily. Double digits is what you said, and you even teased that this game could get ugly and out of hand, and you were damn right, 37-14. It took a while, and USC got off to a damn good start. It was 14-3 after the first quarter, and Longhorn fans were thinking, oh, here we go again. But Texas, over the second and third quarter, dominant, 34 unanswered points en route to this blowout 23-point victory.
What's the old phrase, BK, that you like to throw out here from time to time on these airwaves? Every so often, a blind squirrel busts a nut open and gets to eat that nut. Hey, 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 hey.
No, it's just every blind squirrel gets his nut, I think.
Every blind squirrel, okay. Yeah, so every so often, I actually feel pretty good about something, say it confidently, and it actually comes true. It's not often.
Nope.
And I do agree with you, as a matter of fact, that it may just be my wife and my kids because my kids don't know any better. And actually, I would maybe even put my wife's opinion of me in question at times. But my own mother yesterday, who was in town for my daughter's birthday, came to me on Sunday morning after I'd gotten up, and she walked up to me and said, "Congratulations, you were right." Like, it hurt her to say that her own son was actually correct.
Does she like me more than you?
Of course she does.
Yes.
She's a listener of this radio station.
But well done. Well
Thank
done.
You.
I think I was the only person at the Horn who picked the USC win, so I probably deserve to take it on the chin for that one.
And you almost felt obligated. You said this on Friday, that you almost felt obligated because everybody else was picking the Longhorns to win this game. And what was it that we talked about with this game last week, BK? How we thought it might play out if Texas was to actually look pretty good in this one. That it's a pretty close game at halftime, which it was. Texas did a great job of getting the ball back and really, I know they were trying to score a touchdown, but at least playing for a field goal, and we'll get to Cameron Dicker in just a second, to have a two-point lead going into halftime. And then after halftime, and really starting in the second quarter, Todd Orlando's defense put the clamps down on the USC offense and really started to rattle JT Daniels. The defensive line played a really good game in the second half. Blitz-wise, they were doing a lot of different things to really just have him all sorts of confused. And because USC's offense continued to either turn the ball over or go three and out or something close to three and out, the USC defense started to really tire out from there. On top of that, Texas had a couple of really nice drives in the second half, one to really secure a firm lead in a two-possession ball game, that first drive coming out of halftime. And then after that, Sam and the offense did enough. They did their part to make sure that Texas wins this ball game. You get the special teams play to go along with that. Caden Stearns, who is a future star for this team and in this league, possibly a future All-American with the blocked field goal kick that was picked up by Anthony Wheeler, returned for a touchdown. Texas ends up winning 37-14.
Yeah. The number one stat for this game, if you're looking for why Texas won the way that they did, just look at the rushing yards. 160 for Texas, which you'd like it to be a little bit more, right? The Longhorns only averaged 3.3 yards per carry, but you saw Trey Watson have a good game. Daniel Young had a couple of nice carries. I think most importantly, Sam Ellinger made a lot of plays with his feet.
Absolutely.
And this coaching staff, something that, Trey, you and I and a lot of Longhorn fans have complained about the first 2 weeks. It almost looked like the coaching staff, the Texas coaching staff, had Sam Ellinger in bubble wrap. You know, like in the movie A Christmas Story, when Ralphie's brother gets put in like the 400 winter coats before he goes outside. I can't put down my arms. Yeah. That's what it looked like for Sam Ellinger the first 2 weeks, because they weren't letting him run the football, which is the strength of his game. He made a couple of big plays with his feet, which was nice to see. But more importantly than the 160 that Texas had, -5 rushing yards for USC. I know they don't have a Ronald Jones, but -5 yards. Stephen Carr and Aka Cedric Ware and JT Dan. I mean, everything that USC tried to do on the ground didn't work. Texas had 10.5 tackles for loss. That doesn't include the 3 sacks that they had. 10.5 tackles for losses yesterday. It was yesterday, Saturday. After the first couple of drives, which USC scored touchdowns on 2 of its first 3 drives, and they were long TD drives. But after that, you mentioned it, Trey. Todd Orlando and this defensive unit put the clamps down and smothered SC.
And there was really one other drive where USC had good opportunity to score points. It was the drive where the receiver went up and caught, I think it was St. Brown who caught it, over Brandon Jones, who was in good position. He just whiffed on the football. Yeah. They actually got the ball inside the 5-yard line. But Brandon Jones, a lot of people haven't talked about this over the last couple of days, really made up for that gaffe with a couple of touchdown-saving tackles on 2nd and goal and then also 4th and goal as well. And let's just think about, you mentioned the rushing stats, and it's impressive that Texas holds USC to negative rushing yards. Just think of how good that would look without that Stephen Carr touchdown run on the very first drive. It was like a 25-yard touchdown run. It would be closer to negative 30 rushing yards without that one.
No doubt. No doubt about it. The Texas offense, I thought, made some big plays. How about this? 10 of 19 on 3rd down. That is huge, and that's been a bugaboo for this Texas offense for a couple of years, not being able to pick up those 3rd downs.
And that was a good mix of Sam not only throwing the football for 1st down, but also using his legs at the right time as well.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And what do you think, Trey? I mean, what kind of confidence level do you have for this one? Obviously, the non-conference slate is done. Texas goes 2-1. The Maryland game, it is what it is, but the Longhorns should have some confidence moving forward, regardless of what you think against of USC and what this team is and where this program is. Still a big win and a dominating win over a ranked opponent. The first ranked win for Tom Herman during his tenure here at the University of Texas. Is this confidence? Is this right confidence that this Texas team should have moving forward against TCU this weekend?
I'm not going Texas's back, folks. I'm not even coming anywhere close to that, because the reality of this USC team right now is they're just not a very good football team, BK. Now, that doesn't take away the feel-good of the win itself. Look, it was a big win for a couple of regards. One, if you lose that game, there are some serious question marks that start to come into play as to whether the coaches are losing the locker room. It was a huge recruiting weekend as well.
Yeah.
For those reasons, it was a big win. For the fact that it gives the crowd a little bit more confidence to show that their presence actually does matter. It's a big win from that regard as well, because they're going to be needed as much, if not more, this Saturday versus TCU. Kickoff 3:30 right here on the Horn. But it's certainly not the end all, because like I said, this is not a great USC football team. We know that 3 weeks into the season right now. By the end of the year, they may be a decent squad.
Sure.
But they have a true freshman starting at quarterback. A true freshman is probably their best player on offense as well, with St. Brown. And it's also a defense that is very flawed as well. We talked about how many rushing yards they've given up to this point in the season. This coming Saturday, is the first real test for this football team. At least you got things going in the right direction versus the sour note that they beat Tulsa on a couple Saturdays ago. And TCU is going to be a fantastic matchup for this Texas squad. They do a lot more in the way of counters, in the way of misdirections, and they have a ton of athletes on the offensive side of the ball that are really going to test some of what has been an issue for this Longhorn football team through 3 weeks, and that is some busted coverages on the back end and also linebackers getting sucked into plays and not being in the right position when they do run the misdirections.
Hey, can we not think about TCU just yet? I know that's for the coaches and the players. Let me enjoy this one.
You're right.
It's a nice win for Texas.
Were you in the stands on Saturday? I know you bought a ticket on Friday.
I was in the stands on Saturday amongst the peasants out there. Ain't no Bud Light Sweet. There's no Aaron Hogan going on here. I'm sitting upper deck where the real fans sit.
East or west side?
Oh, don't make me do directions here.
Were you on the student side or the alumni side?
Which side does the sun come up on?
Oh, I don't know, Jared Goff. East?
East. I was on the east
side. You were
on
the east side.
Yeah, east side.
Were you near the USC fans?
No. I was actually very close to midfield.
Oh,
which
nice.
Which was nice. East side, upper deck. I like how the visiting section is now up in the upper deck corner. That's where they belong. Oh, my gosh. Why were we giving them great lower bowl end zone seats for so many years? That made no sense. And I will credit Chris Del Conte. I will credit the Texas fans, man. I mean, they showed out. Record crowd, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, more than 103,000 strong at DKR. Now they're going to need it this Saturday against TCU and every Saturday moving forward. I would love this Texas team to go 6-0 at home and take care of business at their home field. I mean, home games during the heyday of this program, during the 2000s decade, those were guaranteed Ws. I would love hashtag make DKR great again. That's the thing that I've been promoting all offseason long. It was absolutely great and electric on Saturday. The students, Trey. I mean, Chris Del Conte has done some incredible things. I think most people would agree since he's taken over the post as athletic director here in Austin. Number one, far and away, was making the student section, number one, all one section.
Yeah.
Instead of spacing it out like for some reason Texas had done in the past. And also making it general admission, first come, first serve. The student section was filling up at 4:30. I mean, an hour before the game on Saturday, Trey, the student section was damn full. That has never happened.
You're turning it into Duke basketball, Kansas basketball, where you incite a certain level of enthusiasm. I love that.
Yeah, and also Bevo Boulevard does a great job of getting people around the stadium well before kickoff, so they'll walk in and be in their seats by the time the game starts. Just all the off-the-field stuff, all the prep, all the game day atmosphere. I think the music is better. Feels like the sounds at DKR, the sound system is a little bit better.
Still, it is.
Still not perfect, but a little bit better. I can actually hear the music and what the hell Bob Cole was trying to say over the PA. But the game day atmosphere was electric, and Tom Herman talked about it after the game, man. He said, look, we feel this. The coaches feel it. The players definitely feel it. He said a couple of players came up to him in the third quarter. We're like, dude, this is nuts. This is huge. Like, the players feel the home field advantage. In this place, DKR, I've been critical of this home field for a long time. It sometimes blows my mind how 90 to 100,000 people can make as little noise as is sometimes made on Saturdays here in Austin. But this past Saturday against USC, they showed out. Texas fans are going to need to do that in drones once again this weekend.
I need to figure out a way, BK, on how to best judge the Texas crowds going forward, because I've been going to games for so long now. There were still moments in the game on Saturday that were frustrating to me, but I realize in thinking about this over the last couple of days that it's probably less of a them problem than it is a me problem, because I think ideally for me as a college football fan, the time where I feel like my presence needs to most be felt is right before a play is about to happen, right? So me as a fan, I tend to be a little bit more proactive with cheering and trying to yell loudly to have a positive impact on our defense when the opposing offense is on the field.
Yeah.
The Texas crowd, though, I think is a little bit more reactionary than they are proactive. And that, look, that's understandable. That's the way it is sometimes. It takes a little bit more of an effort to get them to stand up and cheer when it's not the obvious big third down in a ball game. You visit other places in the SEC, A&M before they were even in the SEC, and they're making noise before the play when their defense is on the field. I think I just have to accept that that is not as much Texas bit. Now, they were doing a better job of it on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I just hope that because they've done so many good things in the way of tinkering and really making wholesale changes with what's happening before the game and during the game itself, they figure out the right cues to give this crowd to make sure that they are cheering at the right times before the plays, because let me tell you, that blocked kick that went for the touchdown, That was that level of loud that I've only experienced maybe 10 times in my life at DKR.
Yeah,
that's that level of loud that was where the stadium was when Tyrone Swoops went in to beat Notre Dame a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been to a lot more games at DKR than I have, and I'm sure a lot of people listening have as well, but Saturday was pretty electric. That Notre Dame game for me was the loudest and most raucous I've ever heard DKR.
Agreed.
A couple of years ago.
It was more so than last night. The loudest game I ever experienced, BK, maybe we can get into this later in the week. Unfortunately, we only have an hour today. Maybe later in the week we can ask people their favorite DKR crowd of all time. For me, it was the Ricky Williams record breaker where they're facing A&M back in the late 90s in 1998. Different people have different games, but I do agree with the Notre Dame game was maybe a slight notch above on Saturday.
Man, the atmosphere played an impact on recruiting. You mentioned around 50 kids who were there, and Texas got a commit over the weekend
as well.
Four-star running back Darian Brown from the state of Georgia, a guy who's been offered by pretty much everyone and their mother. So big game for Texas. Boy, how about the freshman, Trey? Really, for both teams. I mean, JT Daniels, I know USC only put up 14 points. He made some incredible throws.
He showed some moxie early.
That kid is going to be a very, very good player, and I'm glad Texas won't have to see him for the next couple of years because he is going to develop and be a special player at the collegiate level. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown for USC.
My goodness.
That dude's already one of the best receivers in the country. Forget freshman. He is a beast. But for Texas, more importantly, the impact the freshman made over the weekend. I mean, you mentioned Caden Stearns. He's all over the field. Of course, the blocked field goal. I feel for him, man. I wish he could have scooped that up and taken it for a touchdown. Very mature answer, by the way, when asked about it. He said, do I care that I didn't pick it up? No, we scored a touchdown. It's all good.
Very mature reaction when they got into the end zone as well. It wasn't like him flexing or doing. I mean, he was just like there. Like he expects those types of things to happen,
No doubt. And then B.J. Foster, of course, eventually got ejected for the targeting on that hit on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Say what you will about that. That's just kind of how college football is nowadays. You can't hit anybody hard near the head. But he was having a big game. Of course, Joshua Moore, with his first touchdown as
great
a Texas
catch.
Longhorn, a great catch over the middle. The freshman really showed out for Texas, and that's huge, man. We talked all offseason long about how important this recruiting class is. And, oh, yeah, the guy that I haven't mentioned, Dicker the Kicker.
Oh, my goodness.
Put him in the Hall of Honor already. Put him up there. Put his name up in the stadium. He's that good. 3 for 3. And now, my gosh, Tom Herman, we can kick field goals. You don't have to go for it on 4th and 4 every time. You don't have to look at the binder. You've got a guy who can get you 3 points. Cameron Dicker was huge in a 103,000-seat stadium. We weren't sure what to expect from him because he didn't kick a field goal in his first two games here at UT, but he delivered on Saturday, and that was a huge momentum boost for Texas.
BK, there are certain qualities that you can look at for each position to say whether or not the guy has a natural feel for the position. For quarterbacks, it's pocket presence, right? You can't really teach pocket presence. You can teach a little bit on a guy being better in the pocket, but a guy either has a feel for that or doesn't. Same thing with the running back position. You can tell the running backs that understand spacing, understand how they need to continue moving forward versus the guys who maybe hesitate when they get to the line, just unsure of themselves. With kicking, there is a certain quality to kicks that you can really tell if a guy has it or doesn't have it. We've had some decent kickers come through here over the last few years since Justin Tucker left the 40 Acres, but nobody who's even close to special, like Dicker the Kicker,
might end up being. Are we anointing him too soon?
Not anointing him too soon. I think he's a guy who's got that it quality. He just does. You can see with his kicks, the first field goal, that 46-yarder, where it started to the right, but he put the perfect fade on it. He was intentionally trying to do that. Most kickers cannot do that. Dicker the Kicker, as a true freshman, he can't.
And people keep saying he looks like my little brother. I don't look like the guy, man. I don't look like the guy at all.
I see it a little bit. He's got better eyes.
That's messed up, man. That's why I'm on the radio. I think he looks older than I do, if we're being completely honest.
Maybe a little bit.
A couple other stats, man. The time of possession battle was huge. I mean, Texas was dominant in that regard. And that, of course, goes to the success the Longhorns had on the ground versus what they were able to do against USC. I mentioned Texas was 10 of 19 on third down. USC on third and fourth downs combined just 6 of 17. So the Longhorn defense, once again, they got off to a bad start. And I don't know if you can get away with that when you're playing the likes of TCU, Oklahoma, or West Virginia. You can't be giving up 2 touchdowns in the first 3 drives because those teams are going to turn those into much more points.
Right.
They're better offenses than what USC has right now. But after that, Texas really shut it down. They shut the USC offense down, and more importantly, on third and fourth down, that were able to get off the field.
I didn't actually check the time of possession number. What did that look like?
34-38 to 25-22. That's, which you rarely get something like that in a
huge
college football game, in a 60-minute game.
And I would imagine that that disparity was especially evident in the second half. Like a majority of that difference happened in the second half of that game.
Trey, what's your take on the way Sam Ehlinger played? You know, he's been under scrutiny over the first couple of weeks for Texas. Now, Longhorn fans, everybody's pumped that Texas got a blowout victory. Doesn't matter who you're playing against. It's nice to kind of win going away and not have to worry about stressful moments late into the fourth quarter of a contest. But Texas fans are kind of like waiting to see Sam Ehlinger in one of these close game situations. That was the bugaboo for him last year. That was the problem against Maryland, right? Late game turnovers in a close game. But I still thought, despite looking at the stats, because the stats aren't too pretty.
Yeah, below 50%.
I thought he managed a very good game and was crucial to Texas getting this dub on Saturday.
Managed a very good game. I agree with that. And I think that Longhorn fans need to accept that Sam Ehlinger is not necessarily going to be as accurate as a Colt McCoy or even a Shane Buechele. He's going to have his moments where you're like, well, there was something there, but he just misfired. But Sam brings something else to the table that is difficult to teach other guys. Now, I know Colt McCoy possessed the ability to pick big gains up with his legs as well, but when you put Sam Ehlinger's running prowess into the overall package of what he does at the quarterback position, I thought he played a great game the other night. You mentioned that he didn't turn the ball over in a crucial situation. That's huge. And I think more accurate than not, more often than not, he was accurate with the passes that he needed to be. Now, he missed a couple times downfield. He had a couple potential touchdown strikes, but he's established a great rapport with a couple of guys, with Colin Johnson, who had a nice coming out party, and then also LJ Humphrey as well. And that one's been evident since really before the season even started, when they were talking quite a bit how LJ was turning into Sam's safety valve, if you will. But when you take into account what he can do with his legs, sometimes on design runs, sometimes on him scrambling, I think once he learns when not to panic and try and hit the scramble button a little bit too soon, because we saw that a couple of times, when he also gets a little bit more accurate going to his left, because I think if you saw any blatant misfires, it was when he was starting to have to roll to his left when he was feeling the pressure, throwing it toward the sideline. He was inaccurate in those regards. Look, I think Sam proved to Longhorn fans why he needs to be the guy for the foreseeable future. Now, things come off the rails over the next 3 weeks. If they go 0-3 in the next 3 weeks, and we see some of the turnovers resurface, the late-game turnovers, things like that, and the poor decision-making going back, then maybe you have a conversation. And I also know that some people were upset because a couple times it looked like he checked into plays that ended up going for negatives or clearly did not work. That's something that comes with the experience of actually going through those motions as well. Eventually, he will get that side right, too.
Yeah, I like the coaching staff having faith in Sam Ehlinger enough to let him check plays.
You've got to do that with any position, but especially the quarterback position.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Yeah, the deep ball, the one question, the one concern, if you will, for Sam Ehlinger. The accuracy on those deep throws, not his strong suit, but he's a leader, man. He saw what he could do when running the football as well on Saturday, and he made some big-time throws. Good to see Colin Johnson break out. LJ Humphrey needs more than four touches, man. Saw what that dude could do with the football in his hands.
No doubt.
All right, we will take a break. We'll continue to break down Texas 37, USC 14. Longhorns move to 2-1 on the season. 2-0 now at DKR. Of course, the third of three straight home games coming up this Saturday. Coming up next, we'll talk a little NFL. We'll get into the Cowboys and Texans, what happened to both of them on Sunday. We'll look around college and the National Football League as well. It's a recap day. Here, the midday program, Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Specs text line is 337-3776. We'll get to some of those in a little bit. But BK, I believe you have a little bit of breaking news for us firsthand.
Well done, producing and co-hosting today.
Not ideal, but sometimes we make do.
No doubt. Some breaking news out of the National Football League. And this is why Cowboys fans can't have nice things. Excited about the win last night. Guess who's back for the Philadelphia Eagles?
Uh-oh.
Carson Wentz. He has been medically cleared to play for next weekend's game against the Indianapolis Colts, and he will be the presumed starter for the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. So two games missed for Carson Wentz. Eagles go 1-1, including a disappointing loss to, my goodness, 2-0 Tampa Bay. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic, looking like the front runner for MVP in the NFL. Who saw that coming through 2 weeks?
See that dude after the game, too? He's wearing the sunglasses and the beard. He just looks like a boss right now.
He looked like Conor McGregor.
A little bit.
And he stole, that was Deshaun Jackson's clothes that he stole.
Is that what it was?
Absolutely. That might be in our audio of the week segment tomorrow. Ryan Fitzmagic talking about that. But yes, a little breaking news out of the NFL. Carson Wentz expected to return for Philly in week 3.
We do have some other breaking news as well, BK.
Oh, not that.
You had your worst weekend in terms of our football picks in the year plus that we've now been doing this. You went 0-5 on the games that we picked this weekend. And because of that, I now lead our selections by a game.
Man, I was up 2 going into this week.
You were up 2 going into this weekend. You had Auburn covering and LSU found a way to actually win that game outright, which I think shocked all of us. We all owe Mike Gundy an apology because we all slept on Oklahoma State, and they absolutely handled Boise State. And then the other game, Ohio State had a chance to actually cover that one versus TCU, but they ended up just running the clock out at the end. And then you got the two NFL games wrong yesterday. You had the Giants winning outright. The Cowboys won last night. And then the Texans as well, another game that a lot of us did get wrong. We assumed Houston would roll in that one, and that certainly did not happen.
Yeah, that's why we love football so much.
No doubt.
Right? Both college and the NFL. I didn't think about it. The NBA, we all know who's going to win the NBA Finals every year. Baseball's got a little bit more parity. We've seen some newer teams win the World Series recently, but football, man, there's just nothing like it. We've had a ton of parity in college and the NFL through 2 weeks, except for Alabama looks really freaking good.
Wow.
Like everybody's playing for second place. That's how good Alabama looks right now.
Tua Tagovailoa, 13 for 13 on third downs this year.
Seriously?
Passing the football. He has not had an incomplete on third down. I would be surprised if they actually haven't converted on a third down yet. He's playing so well.
You know, they were down 7-0 in that game to Ole Miss on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Ole Miss scored on its first offensive play of the game.
Huh.
And then Alabama, look, we're stoked about Texas putting up, 34 unanswered points? And that's awesome. How about 62 unanswered for Roll Tide? Texas A&M coming into Tuscaloosa this week.
Crazy.
Ouch, right there.
Yeah, good luck with that one, Aggies. Let's get to the NFL, though, BK. Cowboys, they did what you, as a Cowboys fan, needed them to do. You talked about it last week, that teams that start 0-2 only have a 10% chance of making the playoffs after that. The Cowboys, of course, 0-1 after the season-opening loss to Carolina. And they really dominated last night. Now, it wasn't the best of offensive performances, but this defense is starting to look like a unit that has the potential to be a top five in the entire league.
Yeah, that's how the Cowboys are going to have to win games this year. They're going to win with defense, which is something you haven't been able to say in Big D for a long, long time. That defense is ridiculous. Boy, they had Eli Manning scrambling for his life back there. You saw a couple of great Manning faces last night because how much pressure the Cowboys were able to get on Eli Manning. 6 sacks, all by 6 different Dallas Cowboys. And I'll tell you what, man, Rod Marinelli deserves the game ball, the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. Saquon Barkley, I know he had 14 catches for 80 yards, but those were all checkdowns. He only had 28 yards rushing. And Odell Beckham Jr., only 4 catches for 51 yards. And most of those were in the last couple of minutes when the game was already in the balance. So Rod Marinelli did an incredible job, number one, getting pressure on Eli Manning, making life miserable for him, and number two, taking away the two superstars from that New York Giants offense. Great performance defensively. And I'll tell you what, the de facto MVP of the Dallas Cowboys through 2 weeks is no player. It is an assistant coach, and that is Chris Richard, the defensive backs coach who the Dallas Cowboys brought in from Seattle. He was the D-back coach when the Seahawks had their Legion of Boom defense with Sherman, of course, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. Well, now Chris Richard is here in Dallas. The Cowboys' secondary last night was awesome. Byron Jones has made the transition from safety to corner very easily. It's been almost seamless. Chido Awuzie, second year in the league, he looks like a lockdown corner in this league. He's been really good. And the safeties have looked solid as well. Kayvon Frazier looks like a completely different player from a year ago. Anthony Brown not committing pass interference penalties every time he's on the field. The Cowboys secondary is much improved. They deserve a ton of the credit for the pressure the front seven was able to get on Eli last night. Great defensive performance by Dallas. Now, offensively, look, you saw Zeke kind of bust out of his shell a little bit. I love that the Cowboys were throwing the ball more on first down. You can't be so cookie cutter and so predictable like they were week one against Carolina. You've got to take shots on first down. We saw the deep bomb to Tavon Austin on the first drive of the game. That was great to see for Dallas. And, you know, Dak Prescott, you look at his stat line through the air, 16 of 25, 160 yards, just one touchdown, but no turnovers. He made plays with his feet. He was a great, he managed the game incredibly well. He made plays when he needed to make them last night. People will see the 160 yards and say, well, what is that? That's like eight times in the last 11 games now where Dak has failed to reach 200 yards passing, and that's not ideal.
Yeah, the number looks worse when you take away Tavon Austin's 64-yard touchdown. He finishes with 100, less than 100 yards of throwing the football, but this is a football team that's going to be predicated on establishing a strong run game with Ezekiel Elliott and that offensive line, even without Travis Frederick, and then playing really salty defense as well and hoping that Dak Prescott can manage things. And they did a decent job last night of utilizing his legs at opportune times. You don't want to overrun any quarterback in the NFL, but especially a guy like Dak Prescott, considering what is behind him, who's backing him up right now. If Dak Prescott goes down to injury, even if he is a middling option, the options behind him, who is it, Cooper Rush?
Mm-hmm.
Is that next up? Yeah, that's not going to go well.
Now, Cowboys fan base is so jaded. Like, they average 6.1 yards per play on offense, and they easily beat a division rival, and you'd think the sky is falling.
Right.
Dak might not be as bad as the Cowboys fan base wants him to be.
Meanwhile, the Houston Texans did not beat a division rival. They fall to the Tennessee Titans 20-17. It was a game that saw the Texans take a lead in the second half. Unfortunately, they could not hold on to it, in part because Jadeveon Clowney, who was inactive for the game, ends up getting a personal foul on the sideline. He kind of gives the tight end for the Titans a little bit of a shoulder shiver. Didn't think it was a whole lot, but he also said some things afterwards. The ref was standing right there, clearly thought something egregious happened. Tennessee is able to take the ball down after that. They kick the game-tying field goal, eventually get that go-ahead field goal later in the fourth quarter, and they went 20-17.
Boy, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle wrote that this is one of the most embarrassing losses in Texans history.
It wasn't good.
It's hard to argue because the Titans were playing without their starting quarterback. They were without both of their starting left tackles. They had injuries on defense. I mean, the Texans got beat by Blaine Gabbert yesterday. That is as embarrassing as it gets. And, man, if Bill O'Brien wasn't on the hot seat going into this year through two games, he has made some crucial decisions coaching for the Houston Texans. By the way, I think the Texans are now 0-7 or 0-8, perhaps, in one-possession games dating back to last year.
Wow.
Those type of situations generally fall on the coaches to go help you out and win a football game. The Texans have not been able to win a close contest. You mentioned the stat with teams that start 0-2, Trey. Boy, I was high on this Houston Texans team. I understand losing that game to New England. That's a tough place to win up in Foxborough. But to lose a game to Tennessee with Blaine Gabbert as the starting quarterback and you get beat by a fake punt, that's an inexcusable loss for Houston. And all of a sudden, what looked to be a promising season for the Texans, not over yet, but you look at how Jacksonville has played through two games. Indianapolis actually looked pretty good. It's starting to look like an uphill battle for Houston. They got to turn things around quick.
It is, and I think a lot of the optimism in August with this Texans football team, BK, was predicated on the idea that the offensive line was going to be better. We can put that notion to bed now because they flat out stunk yesterday.
You're right. Penalties, and Deshaun Watson was running for his life.
All right, before we hit the break, let's go ahead and get to
where are we at in society today?
This segment brought to you by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care. Call or text Jake today for a free estimate, 512-653-0687. First-time clients receive 25% off their visit. SLPLawnCare.com for more details.
Your lawns are growing right now like they don't normally do at the end of September. That's because things aren't burned out anymore. We've gotten so much rain. The lawns have started to grow again. Now's the time to take Jake up on that offer. 25% off the first time you use SLP Lawn Care. Go to SLPLawnCare.com. To schedule or to find out more information.
All right, Trey, we might not be the most masculine of all males out there.
I think combined, we've got at least a little bit of masculinity.
I give myself like 95% of that. Is that fair?
Like 85 maybe? I know my diet knocks me down several
your
notches.
Diet, the volleyball love, your lifestyle, going to farmers markets, it's going down. You're not bringing it up, I can tell you that.
Definitely did all those things this weekend.
Unbelievable. So predictable. You married men. You do the same thing over and over again. All right, well, this is a where are we at society story. As feminine of traits that we might have, we're not doing this. How about this? Blame it on whatever you want. Selfie culture, superhero movies, or sheer vanity. There has been an increase, a 29% increase, Trey, in male cosmetic surgery since the year 2000.
Whoa.
Last year alone, men accounted for more than 1.3 million cosmetic procedures to enhance their faces and their bodies.
If you were to have to get one thing done, BK, and I know you're 24, and even though I say I know you're 24 and you won't need anything for a long time because you don't have any wrinkles or anything like that, there are examples of people in their 20s who start to get a lot of work done. I think Lindsay Lohan is on that list. If you were to have to get one thing done, what would it be?
I talked to Snoop Dogg for hims.com/love.
Get some salami enhancement? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I've get. I've never really thought about that before. Like I work in radio. Who do I need to look good for?
All the ladies out there.
I picked them up with my wit.
All the ladies out there that you're scavenging it to in the morning.
Apparently I'm fine the way that it is. How about this? Dr. Douglas S. Steinbrech, presumed Jew, said in 2014, patients at his office used to be 80% women and 20% men. Last year he said it felt like 80% men, 20% women. It's like 29% increase in these for men since the year 2000.
That's a little bit embarrassing.
What are we doing here, men?
I don't know. Look, I'm 40 now. I see the lines starting to form in my forehead. I've got the crow's feet thing going on. My hairline isn't what it was 10, 15 years ago. But I guess I've accepted the aging process, BK. I understand that I probably am not going to get carded a whole lot going forward. And when I do, it is honestly a little bit annoying to me now. It's not cute. You're not paying me a compliment. You're just annoying me that I have to find my ID in my wallet and pull it out and show it to you. You know I'm old enough.
Yeah, I still get it. I'm like the only person of my friends getting carded nowadays.
We're all getting beer.
We're getting beer at DKR. There's like five of us. I'm like fifth in line, and they asked for my card. Nobody else in front of me got carded.
You should get a fake ID and do something with the last name Dicker, since everybody says you look like Cameron Dicker. That might endear you to some free drinks.
Put me in the Hall of Honor. Already.
Maybe you're like Dicker the Licker or something. You like taking tequila shots. You like licking the salt off of the tequila shots.
I don't like Dicker and Licker being in the same. All right, we're taking a break. Coming up next, we'll get to our dogs and cats of the week. Of course, top of the hour, Tom Herman, his game week press conference. You'll hear it right here, recapping the win over USC and previewing this weekend's conference opening tilt, a big one against the Horny Toads, the Horn Frogs of Texas Christian. That's coming up next. It's the Midday Program. This is the Horn.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, coming up at the top of the hour, Tom Herman speaking to the media as he does every Monday at noon, and we'll follow that up with Shooting the Bull about what Coach Herman had to say about the USC win, and looking forward to a huge matchup to open conference play versus TCU this Saturday here in Austin. Right now, though, BK, it is time for... Uh-oh. Where did the dogs and cats go? I'm having to produce today's show as well as co-host as well, and I just had it and I lost it now. So it's the dogs and cats from the weekend, BK, brought to you by Audio Visual Consultation.
Who let the dogs out?
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
We need more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here.
How do you guys operate with like 3,000 hotkeys? I have like 12 and it still confuses me sometimes.
That's Wax's bit for this show. I don't know. But AV Consultations, that's a great bit. They bring you this segment and so many segments here on the Midday Program. We are 2 weeks away, Trey, from the best sports month of the year. That's October.
Yep.
No debate. Football, basketball, baseball, playoff baseball, and hockey will all be on. That means it's a perfect time now to make the call to AV Consultations and get your TV setup done the right way. In the comfort of your home, don't go to bars. Stop going to in-laws' places. Make people come to your house. Or watch alone, whatever you got. AVConsultations.com. Call them today. You won't regret it. 255-8678.
Okay, I'm starting out with a dog from the football weekend, and I am going to Denton, Texas.
Yeah!
Well, technically, I think the game was in Arkansas, where the Mean Green absolutely took care of business versus an SEC foe. Boy, Chad Morris is having a rough start in Fayetteville with Arkansas. North Texas not only wins that game, they pull off a very innovative play in the process where they essentially duped Arkansas into believing that a fair catch was made on a punt. It was the second punt of the ball game early in that ball game as well. I think North Texas led like 10-0 at the time. they duped Arkansas's return team into believing there was a fair catch when no such fair catch had been made. I'm sure you've seen the highlight by now. They take the punt up the left sideline and end up scoring a touchdown based on that as well. SB Nation wrote a great behind the scenes on how exactly they pulled that off. It involved the coaches warning the refs about it beforehand. It involved the North Texas offense knowing it was coming so that none of the offensive players actually set foot on the field because that would have negated the play. And, it, of course, it involved the punt returner taking a major risk and possibly getting absolutely lit up if dudes saw that he did not wave his hand up in the air. Things worked out. North Texas is rolling right now with, I think it's Seth Luttrell.
Seth Luttrell.
Good on Seth Luttrell.
Yep. The next head football coach of Texas Tech next year. You heard it here first. You also heard the BK underdog lock of the week being North Texas. Moneyline over Arkansas. I told you all my other picks were wrong, though. All right, my first dog of the week. I can't believe I'm doing this. Blake bleeping Bortles.
How about
Blake Bortles threw for 377 yards and four touchdowns in a 31-20 Jags win over the Patriots. Getting some revenge for that AFC Championship game. He did throw an interception, but we can't all be perfect. And you can't expect for perfection for Blake Bortles. But he was just about as close as it gets yesterday. You know that game meant a lot to the Jags. They showed out. Blake Bortles was huge. Dog of the week.
Yeah, Blake Bortles, you mentioned the interception. Early on in that ball game, and I watched more of the first half closely than I did the second half, he was spot on with the short passes, the intermediate passes, the occasional deep ball, and also knowing when he needed to utilize his legs to help them pick up first downs as well. That was an impressive performance by him.
All right, you going?
We have time for one cap from the weekend. I'm going with Big Ten football, BK. Bad weekend for Big Ten football. Not only is Wisconsin probably out of the national championship conversation, the rest of the conference really struggled as well, pretty much outside of Ohio State and Michigan. And that included your Kansas Jayhawks absolutely stomping Rutgers. By the way, that Maryland loss that Texas suffered the first game
of
the year.
Don't say it!
Doesn't look any better after they just dropped one to 0-2 Temple.
Temple lost to Villanova. No, this is not basketball. All right, Maya, we'll get to Vontae Davis next hour. He's the biggest cat of the week. But how about kickers in the NFL? I thought it was college kickers who were supposed to suck.
Yikes.
NFL kickers yesterday, especially Zane Gonzalez of the Browns and Daniel Carlson of the Minnesota Vikings, both costing their teams victories. Kickers all across the NFL were terrible. Dan Bailey, answer your damn phone. Somebody wants you. All right, we're taking a break. Coming up next, we'll take you to campus. The 40 Acres. Tom Herman will address the media for his weekly press conference. That's next here on The Horn.